This podcast is for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised.
Before we get into this episode, Erica made me jump on here to tell you guys, what are we doing?
We recorded this episode like 4.5 months ago, and I kind of shit the bed on editing it for a long time. So since we recorded it, there's been significant updates in this case. So we just wanted to cut in here at the beginning and let you know that we do cut in at the end with an update on what's happened since we recorded this.
4 months ago. Man, I can't wait to hear this episode for the first time and then the update. So this is great.
All right, guys. Well, enjoy the episode. Thanks again for listening.
Welcome back to From Crime to Crime.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
Fine enough. Who cares? You ready to do this?
Yeah.
Well,
I should
first
come up with something better to say than yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've had a couple weeks to think about it, but
sorry about that, guys.
We'll figure it out.
But my voice is back. Everything's good.
You sound wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. We have one housekeeping item. Are you ready?
Yeah. 5-star review.
5-star review. My girl, Susie Rosales. Maybe it's Rosales? It's probably Rosales, huh? Yeah, who am I? I'm not asking you. You can't pronounce anything.
You said my girl, Susie Rosales, so I thought it was like somebody you knew. I was like, nope. How do you not know your own friend's name?
Well, we're friends now, but I didn't know it beforehand. And she hasn't told it to me verbally, just she sent it to me in a text message on
a public platform.
So anyway, she said, Erica and Grant, I've been listening since day one. You guys are amazing. I always have a good laugh while listening to your episodes. I absolutely love Grant's crime dad jokes at the end, and Erica, your laugh makes me happy. I find myself laughing with you always. Your podcast reminds me of a good old fun summertime. Love you guys. Don't ever stop making episodes. Sincerely, a devoted listener. XOXO. Well, thank you, Susie.
And that was very sweet.
We have a lot of fun summertimes by Erica's pool, so we're trying to bring that from there to here.
All right, well, let's get going on this because this episode could be real long.
Go for it. I'm ready.
As much as our listeners love that, I know you hate it. So
they do love it. I know a lot of our comments are like, oh, long episodes. Love long episodes. It's like, really? Okay. I'll sit here.
I think it's because the cases are more interesting.
They usually like it when they're solved, too. I don't know. That's weird. But
yeah, that's only you. All right. So
it's most of them.
So we're going not too far back, but 10 years. May 25th, 2013.
Okay. 2013. I'm going to say Jason Aldean.
No. And I'm not going to let you guess a bunch because it's Florida-Georgia line.
Thank you.
I just want to move on because 2013 was a terrible year for country music.
Yeah. Well, I mean, really, country music's really suffered since like the early 2000s.
Well, yeah,
like,
but
it's really gone downhill.
Yeah, but 2013 was really bad. Florida-Georgia line was number one like 26 weeks that year.
Oh, gosh. That's awful.
Yeah.
That's like half the year.
And it was multiple songs. It'd be them and then not them and then them. And the not thems were not great either. It was Luke Bryan and Hootie and the Blowfish. Or just Hootie, I guess.
Yeah, it's just Hootie. He goes by Darius now. But
oh, that's right.
Seriously, who's listening to Florida Georgia Line? Stop it.
Well, I don't think anybody anymore, but this is 2013, so.
I think I heard they broke up, right?
Yeah, thank God.
Thank God, yeah.
So, okay. So we're going to Bardstown, Kentucky.
All right. Is that close to Louisville, Kentucky?
It is. It's like 40 minutes away.
Oh. If I went to Bardstown, I'd go to the Louisville Slugger, whatever that is.
Yeah. Well, Bardstown is considered America's most beautiful small town. It's been named that by like different magazines and stuff.
Oh, my.
Lovely. Yeah, it is beautiful. It's a historical town. It was settled in like 1780. And its main thing that they do there is bourbon.
That sounds like a Kentucky thing.
You know what it is? It's one of those small towns from a Hallmark movie. You know how Hallmark movies, it's always like a beautiful small town, but everybody's doing great economically and everything's working out good?
Yeah.
Which is not how like most real small towns are.
Yeah, right. There's usually homeless strewed about.
Well, and there's just no jobs because there's nobody there, you know? This is like one of those small towns from the Hallmark movies that don't really exist in real life, but it does, apparently.
Yeah, I looked it up and it's like all red brick old buildings. It is very pretty. There's a
gorgeous
roundabout in the middle of like where the church is. I don't know. It is a very pretty place. I would go there.
So there's a guy named Jason Ellis and he grew up in Ohio playing baseball his whole life. And he was actually pretty good. He even signed with the Cincinnati Reds minor league system.
Oh, wow.
But while he was in college, he fell in love with a girl from Kentucky named Amy. So after they got married,
It's probably that thick Southern accent. Gets us every time.
Yeah, she's got it too. She's real cute. Anyway, so he falls in love with this girl named Amy, and after they get married a couple of years later, they settle down in Bardstown. He still played a few years for the Cincinnati Reds minor league team after they got married, but when Amy got pregnant, she was having some complications, and Jason was traveling a lot. He decided that he needed to be home with his wife and their new son. So he quit baseball. He gave up on his dream.
That's big. I mean, you don't make very much in the minors, and it's a grueling life. Because like you said, they travel all the time. They don't stay in great conditions. They don't make much. It's a really hard life. So probably for the best to get out while you can. Especially if you're not going to the big leagues, you know? Like, you can only ride that so far.
He also had lost his dad earlier that year. So he was kind of going through some stuff and just felt like he needed to be home with his family.
Yeah, I agree with him.
Yeah. So he decided to become a cop in their small town of Bardstown, Kentucky. He was dedicated to his family, to the police force, to the town, the community. He was like the guy. He had joined the force in like 2006, and by 2008, he had already been named Officer of the Year.
Oh, wow.
He was just a good dude.
But is this like Mayberry where there's only him and the sheriff? So like, obviously he was going to get named Officer of the Year?
No. Yes and no. I mean, yes, it's a small town. It has that Mayberry feel, but there's 20 or 30 cops. You know, it's 13,000 people.
Oh, okay.
It's not like 1,000. It's a decent sized town.
Right.
But everybody loved him. I mean, probably not the criminals that he arrested, but everybody else.
It does usually work that way.
Yeah. So by 2013, Jason is a canine officer, and him and his canine partner Figo, they were in the drug unit. Even though it's a beautiful town and stuff, they're still, you know, Mexican Americans and...
Mexican Americans are everywhere.
There's a dope problem here, just like everywhere else. So on Thursday, May 24th, 2013, which was the Thursday before Memorial Weekend, everything was totally normal. He went to work that afternoon because he worked the 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. shift. And so he went to work for a few hours, and then on his break, he stopped at the ball field because his son had a little league game and he was the coach.
Hell yeah.
He also coached with another cop friend of his that was like his buddy, and so they were both there. But then he got a call on his radio and he had to leave.
Was he on call? Oh, he was working.
Yeah, he was on duty. He was just on his lunch break.
Right.
So he rushes back to work, you know, to answer the call or whatever. And then he works the rest of his shift and it's busy like normal. His wife said she tried to call him a couple times. He didn't answer. And then he called her and she was already asleep, you know, doing that phone tag thing.
Yeah.
And then at 1:59 a.m., he calls into dispatch and signs off duty for the night. He had dropped a transport inmate or something off at the jail and left at 1:59 and signed off.
Is this something where, like, they take the cruiser home? Like, he didn't have to change cars or anything?
Okay. Yes. The chief liked them to drive their cruisers even off duty because it made it look like there was bigger police presence than there was.
Just go to the store and hit my cruiser.
Yeah. A lot of towns do that, though. Because it makes it seem like there's more cops than there are, or it makes it seem like there's more police presence than there is. It's like a deterrent for crime.
Probably a money saver, too.
So he lives out on kind of like the edge of town off the Bluegrass Parkway, which is like a pretty big highway that goes through Kentucky. And he lives off of exit 34, which is a clover leaf, you know, like when you get off and it goes around.
Oh, yeah. Like a circle kind of.
Mm-hmm. But it's a big one. Huge. And it's like kind of carved into the side of a hill or a mountain rock thing. So it's big and you can't really see the whole thing from the highway. So as he gets off and starts to go around the clover leaf, he sees tree limbs and debris spread across the road. So he pulls over, turns on his blue lights to warn anybody behind him. Not that there's anybody behind him. It's 2 a.m. But he turns on his blue lights and gets out to clear the road. And when he gets out of his car, a shot rings out, and Officer Ellis is hit with a 12-gauge shotgun in his Kevlar vest.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
How close?
Well, we don't know yet.
Okay.
But right away, a second shot rings out, and this one, it hits under his arm, like where the vest swoops down and penetrates.
Ooh, wow.
And then a third shot, which hit him in the jaw, the temple, and the scalp.
Ugh. Depending on how close he is, that is... not very good.
Nope. Jason Ellis dies at 33 years old, right there on exit 34.
Whew. Wow.
And at this point, nobody knows. I mean, he was there alone.
Right.
So a little while later, a family pulls off the exit and comes up on Jason's car with the lights still on. And they're like, oh, what's this? And then they see him in the road. So the woman runs to his patrol car and radios into dispatch from his radio, officer down, officer down.
That'd be real scary to get out on. I mean, you come up on a cop who's dying or dead, laying there bloody, and you get out too to make a call. Yeah. Like that's brave.
Yeah. Then shortly after she radios in, another guy pulls up too that had just gotten off work from one of the local distilleries. And as soon as he came up on the scene, he realized that something wasn't right away because Officer Ellis wasn't in his patrol car. So he went around the front and that's when he saw him laying on the ground. So he leaned down and grabbed the radio from his vest. And when he calls in, he tells them that there was a police car sitting in the middle of the road and that he didn't know what it was, but the lights were on. And when he got out, that's when he saw the trees across the road. And he said, I don't know what it is. I believe somebody has hit him. And then they ask if he's breathing, and he said, no, sir, he's not breathing. Body temperature is cold.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, I didn't either, but they didn't obviously know he was shot. They thought he got hit by a car or something. So it's sad, but obviously they could tell that he tells the dispatcher right there in that call that he's not alive.
Wow.
So Rick McCubbin is the police chief in Bardstown, and he gets the call around 3 a.m. that one of his officers was killed. So he rushes to the scene. He says when he got there, everybody was just quiet except the crying.
What else are you going to say? I mean, this guy that everybody knows and loves is sitting here, laying here, dead. And they know his situation. They know his background. They know he's got a young son and a young wife, and he's a young guy. Yeah.
By this point, he has two sons.
Oh, wow. Two sons.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. How old were the sons?
I want to say they were like 6 and 8.
That's tough. I don't like that.
Yeah. So Rick McCubbin, the chief, he gives interviews about this, and he says he remembers just kneeling down next to him and being like, oh, my God, how am I going to tell his wife what happened?
Like, I don't know.
They don't even know what happened. He's like, I don't even know what to tell her because we don't know what the hell just happened here. But he realizes that they have to tell her right away because they don't want her to hear it on the news or anything.
Sure. Yeah.
Pretty soon it's going to be daylight. People are going to be driving around. It's going to be a problem. So he said that he sent one of his officers and a chaplain to her house, and the officer gave it away before she even opened the door. He said that he knocked, and as she was coming to the door, the officer just started crying. And what do you say?
Especially, like, at that point, this guy's not coming to your door for any other reason, right?
Right.
It's like what used to happen in, like, World War II, and they would, or maybe they still do it, I don't know, but I saw it in Saving Private Ryan, where they send people to the door to say, like, hey, your son, your husband, whatever has died.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It seems very identical to that. Like, they're not sending those people unless there's a reason.
Yeah. So by the reactions of all these other officers, even now, 10 years later, when they give interviews, they're still bawling in like these grown macho cops, you know, and they're crying. It's like he was so loved.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. So when they start investigating, the only thing they could really tell from the scene was that it was literally an ambush. He was set up to get out of his car and then was shot.
That's kind of what I'd been thinking.
The limbs that were laying across the road were not native to the area. They weren't cut down or blown across the road from the wind. They were cut, freshly cut, and they were not from that area.
That's weird. Like, why mm-hmm. would you bring in your own limbs for this?
So that nobody sees you on the side of the road cutting limbs down to put them on the road?
All right. Well, there you go.
It was a planned attack, obviously. That's what they're thinking. It was a planned ambush. So they also found at the scene where they thought the shooter shot from. Remember you were asking how far away?
Yeah.
So this clover leaf, like I said, was kind of carved out of a rock hillside type thing. So up above him, there was a perch pretty much. And then there was open field and then other roads and stuff up there. And they found shell casings and evidence that the shooter was up top, up above him.
Man.
Yeah, but that was it. That's all they could really tell from the scene. By the time they had his funeral, the chief was pretty upset that they had no leads and didn't have any idea why this happened. He's like, I thought for sure by the funeral we would know. And they didn't. So the whole town came out for this service, including Figo. There's the saddest picture in the world of his German Shepherd Figo with his hands up on the casket.
That's always what it is about us, man. Like, when you bring a dog into it, or any animal really, but it just, it hits different.
Oh, so sad. So they also sent the debris and the casings that they found at the scene for like DNA testing, fingerprints, but nothing. Everything was completely clean. The only thing they could tell was that that debris was not native to that particular area. They theorized that it was more than one person, that it was likely a shooter and then a getaway driver. But they're really clear that that's just a theory and that it definitely could have been one person. They don't really know. But they assume that somebody dropped the shooter off, so there was no car parked there. And then the shooter did what he did, and then somebody picked him up. But that's, the car could have been parked anywhere.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that there's multiple people who are willing to do this. I know that there are, but I just, maybe I don't want to admit it. I don't know. But it's so needless, you know?
So they also don't know if he was targeted personally or if it was just like random anybody that was going to be coming down the ramp they were going to kill or any cop. They don't know if he was personally targeted or not.
Kind of seems random, right? Like, I don't think you cover the road thinking a cop's going to stop by. I mean, maybe you do. I've never covered a road, but I'm thinking it's random.
Yeah, but there are some things that point to him being targeted. Like that was his normal route that he took home every night at 2 a.m. And how many other cars are out at 2 a.m.? Not very many.
Especially in a really rural part, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it took almost an hour for anybody to come up on this scene.
That's true. I'm thinking of like Southern California. You know, that's
yeah
what I have to go off of. So yeah, I guess this could be targeted, which is even worse.
Well, and he was the canine officer in the drug unit, and he was making a dent in that.
Oh, right.
But they were all like really low level arrests, but maybe he was messing with somebody's profits. You know, maybe he wasn't like getting close to figuring out who like a main player was, but maybe he was messing with their income, you know, and it pissed him off or something.
Was his dog in the car when this happened?
No. And that's another weird thing. His canine cruiser was in the shop that day. So his dog had the day off and he was in they called it a pool car, which is just like a extra cruiser that they had.
Sure.
And it didn't have a dash cam.
Oh, man.
And his normal canine unit had a dash cam.
And a canine,
yeah. So that's another thing. It's like, did somebody know that he wasn't in his normal car? Although I don't think that matters because even if there was dash cam, it wouldn't have caught the shooter because the shooter was up high.
Yeah. Good point.
It would have caught the shooting, but it would not have caught the shooter on camera.
Yeah, it would have just seen him keel over.
Yeah, so there's some things that point to it being targeted, but then there's other things that it's like it could have just been for anybody, but not everybody would have pulled over and moved the debris off the road. Some people would have just driven around it.
Yeah, I probably would have. I mean, honestly, especially at 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm. But you know a cop's going to stop and move it because he's a public servant. Even though he's off duty, he still would do it.
Yeah, I could see that.
But see, like somebody like me, I'd run over it before I ever got out of the car and moved it.
That does sound more like you, yeah.
Yeah. And if I couldn't run over it, I would turn around and go a different way. I'm not getting out of the car at 2 a.m. to move trees. It's not going to happen.
I think I agree with you. You know, I think that there's a lot of things that women have to think of because men are awful most of the time.
Yeah.
So, but I think the same thing, like, at the gas station, I'd probably get out of the gas station at 2 a.m., but I don't think in the middle of nowhere like this with nothing around, I'm probably not getting out either. I'm probably pretty scared of the dark at this point.
So they work this case from every angle, forward, backwards, track every lead. They change their policies at the police station. Like they don't sign off duty until they get home, like to their houses.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm, because the chief decided that if something like this were to ever happen again, at least the dispatcher would have been like, hello, did you make it? Like, you should have signed off already.
Yeah. Good call, Chief McCracken.
McCubbin.
McCubbard, yeah.
McCubbin.
McCubbin.
Yeah. So this leads to a lot of change in this community. First of all, they're traumatized because this kind of stuff shouldn't be going on here. But then also, it changes everything. And everybody's scared. They don't know what the hell just happened.
I gotta ask, so do they realize immediately that these branches aren't from the area? Because...
Yes.
Really? That's impressive. Yeah. Really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have put that together very quickly. Maybe I would have.
Well, I'm sure part of it was they looked around, like, where did somebody cut this branch from? Or where did it break from? And they were like, wait a second, this isn't the same trees that are around here.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, so they work every angle for 11 months and no leads, and then tragedy strikes Bardstown again.
Is it another cop?
No. In April of 2014, a woman named Kathy Netherland, who's 48, she's a special ed teacher at Bardstown Elementary. She has two kids, a daughter named Holly, who's away at college, and a 16-year-old daughter named Samantha, who lives at home with her. And just 7 months before, she had lost her husband to cancer.
God.
Yeah, so the family's still majorly grieving over the loss of her husband and the girl's dad. But they were getting to where they could enjoy things again. They were starting to kind of get back into a routine. Samantha volunteered at the local animal shelter, and she had just been accepted to this great school at the college, some kind of Doogie Howser program thing where like high school kids go to college. Yeah, she was like super smart.
Oh, that's a good reference. I like that.
Yeah, and she was really, really, really excited to go to prom the next week. She had just bought this really pretty blue prom dress and sent pics to her sister and her aunts to show them.
Who did you go to your senior prom with?
You, Grant.
It's true. It was me.
Yeah. So Kathy, her mom, was heavily involved in church and, like I said, was a special ed teacher at Bardstown Elementary. So one morning, Kathy didn't show up to work and she didn't call in, which was extremely unusual. She was very dependable.
Dude, do these girls lose their mom on top of losing their dad? I hate this.
So her coworkers were concerned because she didn't call in. And then they realized that 16-year-old Samantha didn't make it to school that morning either.
Oh, man.
Remember, like I said, Doogie Howser? That's not normal. She goes to school every day. She's super right. Smart. So the schools called their friends and family, and when their family went to check on them, they discovered a gruesome scene. Kathy and Samantha had both been brutally murdered.
Okay.
The details of their murder, though, have been pretty vague over the years. They don't really talk about this case very much. But the death certificates say that Kathy was shot several times, and Samantha was beaten, and both of their necks were cut.
Oh my God. That's like... We're coming, like, we're here to do it. You know, like, that's not an accident. Thing got out of hand. Like, those people were coming literally for blood.
Yeah, it's Israel Keyes shit.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah, it is.
So, although this was after Israel Keyes unalived himself, so it wasn't him. But the community rallied around this family. And there was a huge funeral service the day that Samantha should have been going to her first prom.
That's heartbreaking. And even worse, this other young girl who was at the college, she's got no one left.
Yeah. She lost her dad and then her mom and her sister. Yeah.
Oh,
so
gosh.
The family decided to bury Samantha in her prom dress so she could wear it at least once.
Oh, Erica. Oh, yeah, my God. Oh, that is beautiful and horrible.
I know. So the police had no leads, just like Jason Ellis. They just had they were like, who the fuck would do this? I mean, Kathy and Samantha had zero enemies. Everybody loved them. Samantha was a 16-year-old super smart girl who volunteered at the animal shelter. Like, she was an angel. Who would want to murder her? And her mom was a special ed teacher who was involved in church, and they were good people. There's nobody that wanted them dead. And nothing was missing. Their wallets, keys, purses, phones, cars, everything was still there. So it wasn't a robbery.
But because this was such a large gap, you know, what'd you say, 11 months, I think?
Uh-huh.
Are they even thinking serial killer at this point? Is it the same?
No.
No, nothing yet?
No, but it's another tragedy that this town is like, what in the hell is going on here?
Yeah, I'm sure the townspeople haven't really forgotten. I mean, like, oh my gosh, this, and then, you know, remember not that long ago, that cop? Like, yeah, this is a problem quick.
Well, and they're traumatized because neither one of them are solved.
Good point, yeah.
So everybody's just like, oh, great. So there's somebody going around killing good people. You know, it's not like somebody's going around killing gang members or something. I mean, they're killing regular people who've done nothing to anybody. So the only lead that they had in this double murder was video surveillance of a black Chevy Impala. It was likely a 2006 to a 2013. And it was seen on video surveillance at a gas station near the Netherlands home at 7:50 p.m. the night before, which was the night they think that they were murdered. But that hasn't led anywhere. They've never identified that car or who was in it. Nothing. So, like you said, Holly's been left with nothing.
Did they know what kind of car it was?
Yeah, I just said it. 2006 to 2013 Chevy Impala.
Perfect. Sorry, I was thinking about something else. But okay, so 2006, 2013 Chevy Impala. Okay.
Yeah, but that didn't lead anywhere. I mean, there's a million of those on the road. Black Chevy Impalas with a 7-year stretch.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, great. Everybody? Cool.
Although, I mean, an Impala, there's not a lot of people driving Impalas, right? It's not like a Civic. So it probably isn't as rare as it sounds, right? Or are Impalas big in Kentucky?
I don't know. I don't live in Kentucky. But judging by the fact that they haven't identified it, I'm assuming it's pretty common.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. So really the only theory is like a random act of violence. Like somebody just randomly broke in and like they maybe weren't even targeted. Or maybe it was a gang initiation of some kind. Like, I don't know.
Gang initiation? Oh my God. I would hope not.
Well, they don't have really any good theories because they had no enemies. Nobody hated these women.
Do you remember that thing that, like, if you would drive past a car without its lights on, that if you flashed it, that used to be gang initiation? Do you remember that? Was that real?
Yeah.
Oh, was it? Yeah, I mean, kind of thought so, but you never know.
I still don't flash people because that scared the shit out of me.
I do, but then I get real weird afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we're coming up on 10 years since the Netherlands murders, and there are still no answers and no leads. So, like we said, this town is in shock. They've had 3 really brutal murders in 11 months. So by July of 2015, no one has forgotten any of this. Like, it's still top of mind for everybody, but they're back to their normal lives.
Do we know what happened to the daughter that was away at college?
No.
I just hope she's okay. That's a lot.
Yeah. She doesn't give interviews and doesn't talk about it, so we don't know.
Fair enough.
So nobody in this town has forgotten, though, about Jason or Kathy or Samantha when they get another shock.
Is that another brutal murder?
Well, we don't know yet, but possibly.
Okay.
A woman named Crystal Rogers, who's in her early 30s, she's a mother of 4 young kids. She's recently divorced from her husband, so she rents a house for her and her kids to live in from a guy named Brooks Houck. You following?
The only guys named Brooks that I trust are Garth Brooks.
So,
yeah, come on. That's a good one. Man, where's Ella?
Well, Garth Brooks is also a serial killer. Haven't you heard all the things?
No. Maybe Chris Gaines, but not Garth.
Tom Segura like started this whole thing about how Garth is a serial killer. And now every time Garth posts a video online, everybody's like, where are all the bodies, Garth? It's like a whole fucking thing. So funny.
I did see Garth and Trisha play at Rosalind Carter's memorial.
Yeah. Okay. Back to the story.
If I die before Garth, can you get Garth and Trisha to play at mine? That's all I ask.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I'll try. Thank you. If it makes you feel better.
It does.
So Brooks Houck was also in his early 30s. He's a decent looking guy and he was pretty successful. He was a construction guy, like a builder. He would build homes and he also owned 70 to 100 rental properties.
Oh, so he's very wealthy too.
Yes. He also owned a large couple hundred acre family farm on the outskirts of town that his mother lived on. So it was like in their family for a long time. It was his mother's parents' farm. And then when his mother's parents, so his grandparents, passed away, he bought his mom's siblings out of the farm. And then his mom lives on the farm. But it's like their family farm.
But now he owns it.
Yes. But his mom lives there. He doesn't live there. He lives in town. But it's like a 200 or 300 acre farm.
This sounds like another one that we did where the mom lived in the house and the son lived in a trailer behind. And I think he was a serial killer.
I don't know. You know what I'm talking about? I think you've got it all wrong.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Definitely be.
Yeah. So anyway, Brooks and Crystal hit it off. You know, her and her landlord.
That's one way to pay the rent.
Yeah. Yeah. So they start dating and eventually they move in together. They also have a child together, a little boy whose name is Eli.
Oh, that's cute.
So now Crystal has 5 kids. She has 4 kids from previous, and then her and Brooks have a child together, Eli.
Yeah, that's a lot of kids. How old is she, like 33?
Yeah, she's 35 by 2015.
Whew, that's a lot.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So Eli's 2.5, and things are good with her and Brooks in some respects, but then not so good in other ways. So it becomes pretty clear that Brooks is kind of a dick. I mean, He seems nice and jovial and stuff like to the outside world, but he's an asshole. He treats her other four kids very differently than Eli. And that's a big problem in their relationship.
Yeah, I can understand why.
Yeah. Like, just to give you an example, when they'd go to the grocery store, he would buy groceries for Eli only.
Oh, really?
And he would make Crystal buy the food for her other four kids.
Crystal needs to move on.
Right? I was like, what an asshole.
Yeah, not a chance. I mean, we all know I'm a step-parent. Not a chance that we could ever do that. One, I wouldn't ever allow that, and Christine would rip my face off. So,
right? I'm like, and not only that, how do you even separate that?
Yeah, it's a really good point. Dude, like, he has a cart for him and Eli and goes first and then waits for her.
Yeah, it's like, so when you buy a box of Golden Grahams, like, those other kids can't eat them? Like, that? How does that even make sense?
Do we know that, like, how they divide it up? Like, everyone gets a fifth?
No. So, either way, he wasn't a cool guy, is what the point of that. He's not treating her kids very well. Things are going not great. To the point where CPS was called at one point because he had taken a phone away from one of her older kids and had twisted her wrist taking the phone away. So bad that CPS stepped in and was like...
That's got to be pretty bad. I mean, because...
Yeah.
There's no marks or anything. I don't think CPS is coming out. Like, he must have left her pretty messed up.
Well, apparently it was the family that called CPS. And then when they came to investigate, they kind of said that they were like, well, there's no marks. There's not really, I mean, any proof that there's any badness. But still, that was the kind of shit that was going on. He wasn't treating her older kids very well.
Got it.
And Crystal had told her family and friends that she wanted to leave Brooks. You know, over the years, she had told them that at different times, but that she was scared that he would take Eli from her because he had a lot of money and she didn't.
I've totally forgot that he has a ton of money. This makes it so much worse that he has gobs of money. I mean, owning, what, 100 rental properties? He's doing more than fine. Like,
yeah,
that's crazy.
She also told her mom right around this time that Brooks was doing some shady shit, and she didn't specify what it was, but it was thought to be financial stuff, like taking cash payments for his rentals and not proving it to the IRS.
Well, taxation is a form of theft, so I won't get too mad at him for that.
But the way that she told her mom was like, he thinks I'm stupid. He thinks that I don't understand what he's doing and I know everything. And she told her mom, like, I have proof of everything he's doing illegal. The point is, it seemed like she was trying to find a way out of this relationship and still be able to have some kind of upper hand.
Yeah. Once you start documenting things to, like, make a case.
Yes.
That's probably a good indication that this is over. You know, like.
Yeah.
I would never take notes like this. I'd be like, you know what? This just isn't working out.
Right. And she had been working for him for the properties, like the rental. She'd been managing them. And, you know, when you have 100 properties, it's kind of like a full time job to like collect all the rent.
Definitely.
And when people have issues and, you know,
I would think a property management company would be doing all this.
Yeah. But she was helping out with that portion of the business. So she was documenting stuff and she told her mom that she was.
You got it.
So on Friday, July 3rd, 2015, so 4th of July weekend, Crystal ran into an aunt at Walmart and told her that she had gotten a sitter for the older kids. I think they were going to their dad's and then two of them were going to their grandma's or something. And that her and Brooks were supposed to be having a date night that night. So the next day, her older four kids couldn't get a hold of her. And they were really worried. So they called their grandma and other family members. They were like, we can't get a hold of our mom. Like, what the hell's going on? And so Crystal's mom and her older kids were like looking for her. They even ran into Brooks at a gas station the next day, so Sunday.
That's weird, right? Like, they haven't even been, like, gotten a hold of him yet?
Nope. And they ran into him at a gas station on Sunday in town. And her mom, Sherry, was like, excuse me, where the fuck is my daughter? And he's like, I don't know. She just kind of left. And he said that he hadn't seen her since the night of the 3rd, which was Friday night. And he said she just kind of took off in the middle of the night. And she's like, what are you talking about? And when she looked into Brooks's truck and saw Eli in the back seat, she knew something was way wrong. Because Crystal would never, even if she was going to leave Brooks, she would never leave Eli. Eli was the only reason that she hadn't left Brooks already.
Right.
was because she was afraid that Brooks was going to take Eli from her. That was why she was still with him.
Yeah, there's something fishy going on.
Mm-hmm. So her mom, Sherry, tells Brooks she's going to file a missing persons report because she's like, she can't just vanish. She has five kids. She's never done this. Brooks's only response was just like, yeah, you should probably do that. And then he left.
What a dick. Like, just what an asshole. Like, if nothing else, man, this is the mother of your child. Your one and only that you care about.
Right?
Like, for his sake, can't you just not be an asshole for a little bit and be helpful?
Right.
You've got tons of money. Why don't you help, you know, pay for someone to help find her? Like, there's a lot of things he could have done, especially in his position.
Or at least just act like you give a shit that she's gone.
Yeah, that too. This is your son's mom.
Yeah. So Sherry, her mom, files a missing persons report. And that same day, later in the afternoon, Crystal's car is found on the side of the Bluegrass Parkway.
In the same area that the first officer was killed?
Not too far from it, but not exactly the same area, no. But not that far from it. So one of her tires was kind of flat, but they said it wasn't even really like flat. Like she would have drove on it or she would have called somebody to come help. Like everybody's like, there's no way she would have just pulled over for this. She would have driven to a gas station or called somebody to come help her.
Remember that time you were mad at Matt? And you weren't talking to him, but then you got a flat, so you had to call him and be nice to him.
Oh, that sucked so bad. Oh, that was the worst. I almost called and just signed up for AAA just because of that.
I'm surprised you didn't, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was his car, too, which makes it even better.
That was the worst. So anyway, one of her tires was kind of flat, but inside her car was her purse, her keys, her phone, everything.
So she didn't go just out. She's missing.
Yeah. Who leaves their purse and their phone and their key, everything in the car? No.
I know I don't.
Even if she got a flat tire, she'd grab her purse and her phone and her keys and walk somewhere or call somebody. So her parents, Tommy and Sherry Ballard, immediately know something is wrong because of this. And they already knew something was wrong. That's why they reported her missing. Like, she'd never gone 2 days without talking to her kids, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, that's a huge red flag.
Yeah, so they put together teams of searchers, and they start their own investigation right away. Even before the police, they were just like, we got to start searching. They start searching the woods around the Bluegrass Parkway where her car was found, but they don't really find anything, but they don't give up. They just keep searching. And her dad, Tommy Ballard, was very vocal in the media about this being something being wrong and having to find his daughter, like, immediately.
And we know that's so important for people to advocate for the people who are missing, because it's really the only way that someone's going to care is if the people missing them care.
Yeah. And part of the reason that his panic was like immediate panic, and part of the reason that it hit home so hard for him, is that in the 1970s, Tommy, her dad, had a sister who went missing.
Oh, wow. What are the odds?
Yeah. She went missing when she was pregnant, and her remains were found a few years later, and she had been murdered by her husband.
Don't like that.
So this is like extra bad for Tommy, because he already had a sister that went missing and then was found murdered, and now his daughter's missing, you know, 30 years later.
I don't blame him if he's losing his damn mind. I probably would be too.
Yeah, and one of the biggest red flags for Tommy and Sherry was that Brooks was completely uninterested in the search. Not once did he say he was worried about Crystal, ask if he could do anything, help look for her, nothing. He was just totally uninterested.
So does this raise, like, eyes for the police? Are they like, hey, this guy might know something?
Yes, 100%. They interviewed him at his home, kind of like casually, and then they called him in for an interview on July 8th. A couple days after she was reported missing.
Good. They should at least ask him. Like, as far as we know, this is the last guy to see her alive, right?
Oh, yeah. And this interview is all recorded and taped and everything. In fact, I sent you, Grant, the recording, and we're going to play a little bit of some of the interrogation for you guys so that you can hear how this kind of goes down. I mean, it's a 2-hour interrogation, so we're definitely not going to play it all, but I'll play you a couple clips so you can kind of get the gist of this guy's personality, because you're going to hate him just from 3 minutes of it. So we don't need to play all 2 hours. But the gist of the 2-hour interview, his like story, is that they had a date night planned on July the 3rd. So Friday night, Crystal dropped her two kids off at their dad's, and then the other two went with their grandma. So it was just him and Eli and Crystal, and they were going to have a date night. So they headed to his family farm on the outskirts of town to feed the cows around 7, 7:30. He says they fed the cows, walked around, had a bonfire, and then went home around midnight. And he says that she was playing games on her phone with Eli, and Brooks went to bed. When he woke up the next morning, Eli was there in bed next to him, and Crystal was gone.
Wow.
And that's literally the gist of his story. It takes him 2 hours to get to that, but that's the gist of his story.
How weird. Again, yeah. Why don't you want to be more helpful with this? Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot wrong with this story. First thing, date night on a farm to feed the cows? Is that a date night?
Yeah, I kind of thought that too, to be honest. I was like, I mean, that's a chore. That's not a date night.
Right? That's what I was, it's like, okay, we're city people. So it's like, oh, that might be like a fun date night for us, going to a dude ranch or something and feeding the cows, like, because it's not something we do all the time. But for these people, it's something they do all the time. It's a chore.
They have a farm.
It's not a date.
This is something they do all the time.
It's not a date night thing. So I don't, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that is a date night thing. I don't know. But also what's weird about that is that it was torrential downpouring that whole weekend.
That seems weird.
Raining real hard. And he said they had a fire and walked the whole property.
Yeah.
Went on this, like, you know, couple hour walk in the rain with a 2-year-old in pretty much the middle of the night.
That's not adding up.
No. So the other thing that doesn't add up is why he hasn't been worried since.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And just like the way he acts in this interview is really off-putting. Right from the start, he comes into the interview way too prepared. It's just, it's too much.
All right, I'm gonna take a minute here and read through your statements. That's all right from you. Get an idea. You might answer some of my questions already, so but I did, so I, you know, I was trying to cover as much as I could. If my writing's not real, as you just asked me, if I can clarify it real quick for you, is this Friday you work on Duke Construction on Friday? Yeah, I didn't put that order, but I put all that right there. The further you go, the more clarified I get. I broke it down into segments.
Oh, these are the people whose house you were working on?
Yeah, all these right here are people that I'm overseeing, that I'm speaking or talking to. We just look at my phone to get my exact time. I have my phone in there, and that way you can build a timeline of all this stuff. But I do this every day, so me looking back, I had no what time it is.
Right.
There's no way for me to remember that. I mean, you'll see the more that you get to looking through there, you'll see how much I've got in my head to try to keep up with. All these are guys that are working for me that helped me, every one of them.
Okay.
And then these right here, I skipped a line to break that and put locations, and then I did it in subdivision, so y'all know where my vehicle, y'all know where I'm at, my phone and everything. Those are the numerical address, the street address, and this is the type of work that I've got going on past that hyphen mark. Those are the type of work I've got going on at each construction site. Every one of them is a separate job. And then this right here is for the whole subdivision. Keep the Woodlawn Springs homeowner subdivision, the president and all the members, the committee and stuff. All, you know, I want to keep the subdivision looking nice, trash and debris and all that kind of stuff. The metal grates in the road, the curb and gutter and all that. And this is just kind of like a daily thing. I've got to go through this every day to keep everybody rolling and everybody happy. And this switches subdivisions. You see, I put copper fields up here, and then these are the number of houses I got going out there. I've got different subs in different spots.
That's way too detailed. Like, and
yeah.
Well, and like, there's no, like, the cop doesn't even ask him any questions. He like shows him, like, okay, this is what it is. This is the timeline. Like,
he just says so many words. He's like real uncomfortable with silence. Like every time the officer is trying to read what, because that's his statement, his written statement that he wrote
right
before the officer came in. And so every time the officer is trying to read it, he's just talking. It's like he's so uncomfortable with silence that he just talks too much.
I think he's just trying to not have him look through it as closely as the cop probably normally would. I think he's trying to explain things so that, yeah, you know, all the questions are answered. What do you, can I, am I free to go? Like, there's nothing else?
That is part of it. But if you do watch the whole interview, you will also realize that's just his personality.
Did you watch 2 hours of this?
Yeah, I've watched it 100 times. But he says,
okay,
something that you could say in three words, he takes 4,000 words to say it and then never really quite says it. Like, you know what he's getting to, but he never really gets there because he just goes off.
Yeah. And I can understand him being uncomfortable. I mean, I think I'd be uncomfortable in the same situation, but it's the way that he does it. You know, I think anybody else who's uncomfortable would probably just sit there with their hands in their lap, kind of just like, I'm not saying anything. I'm like, if they have questions, I'll answer them. But he's going right above and beyond to get it out there before it even comes up.
Right. Like, listen to this clip.
I know she didn't work out of the home currently, but had she worked out of the home recently? Had she had a job outside of taking care of the rental properties?
Well, she took care of two young children. So she did some babysitting there at the house for some extra money. One little boy was about Eli's size, and other was, I don't know how old, but he was a little bit older. And I don't know how long, if it was 8 months or a year, but she had worked at the store up the road from our house for the, probably want to say anything discriminatory, that I don't want to say if they're not Americans, but they
are. They're Indians.
I don't want to say nothing.
It's a convenience store.
Yeah, store. She worked for some folks up there. I do not know that. I think it might be Sandy or Sandeep or something like that, but I don't know. She worked up there at that gas station for quite some time, but that's been quite some time ago.
Was that before or after Eli was born?
I think she started there before he was born, and she did work some there after he was born. She worked for a pretty good period of time there, but it's been quite some time back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's 2.5. So
he's a little bit older than 2.5. Yeah. He'll be 3 in October.
Almost 3. Yeah.
All right.
So you think it was a year ago or better since she worked there?
Probably approximately. I don't know. I would say give or take a 6-month window there. Something like that would probably be pretty accurate. But I do not know the answer to that. I do not know. I just know it's been a period of time.
Was it you? Have you all, when you, since you've lived together, have you all always lived on Glenview?
That's the only house since Eli has been born. We brought him home from the hospital. We lived there.
Okay.
Yes.
You all were living there when she was working at the, and when she stopped working at the.
When she stopped, yes, when she stopped working there. There was, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 other girls that worked up there with her. I don't know their names. They didn't have a large amount of employees, just a few.
All right, so he doesn't know last time she worked at this convenience store, and he makes it seem like it's years ago, way many years ago. And when the cop asks him more questions, it's like, was it before or after your kid was born? Your child specifically.
Yeah, it's just, he just says so many words. Like in that same clip, he goes on to talk about all the other employees that worked there at the convenience store. And dude, he just asked if she ever had a job outside of the home. Just say yes and shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Anyway, his story isn't lining up real good either, because he can remember stupid shit. Like when the cop said your kid is 2.5 and he said, well, he's almost 3. And it's like, okay.
That's 6 months.
Relax.
You know, in your timeline, in your head.
It's 3 months because this is in July and he says he's going to be 3 in October. Mm. So he's literally differentiating. But when the cop says 2.5, the kid is 2.75. Like, get real.
Yeah.
So it's like he can remember stupid shit details like that. But then stuff that you would definitely not forget, he cannot remember. He's just a dick and says he can't remember days and times. And, you know, I'm just so busy and all these people depend on me and I have all this. How could I possibly remember things? Well, and it's like.
And also in his written statement, I mean, he talks about how he has everything written out. Like he goes through it day by day. So you would think he'd have a better idea of what it was he was doing on each day, because all this stuff is written out for him. And I'm not saying he keeps his list, but I do think he'd have kind of a better idea.
Well, he obviously went through his phone and his planner and all of his stuff to put together this detailed timeline of his schedule. But yet all of a sudden from the night of the 3rd to the night of the 5th, he can't remember anything he did. He'll say like, yeah, we went to the farm and stuff like that, but he can't not remember details. Like the cop's like, okay, so did you light the fire before or after you went on your walk? And he's like, don't know. Could have been either. Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay. The cop starts to like hone in on little details that he cannot remember.
Right. Interesting he did this without a lawyer, huh?
Oh, yeah. He talks about that too. He goes, I'm 100% innocent, so I don't need a lawyer. I'll sit here all day and answer your question. Like, he's just cocky. So he also says when the cop starts grilling him about why he's not worried about Crystal, he says that she leaves all the time for a night or two to cool off when they fight. But then later in the interview, he says they don't hardly fight, or, you know, like, he just contradicts himself a lot.
Yeah.
Plus, her friends say that she is never, because, like, he says she goes to her friend's house to cool off for the night, and her friends are like, that's never happened, not one time. Like, she'll come to my house if they get in an argument, and she'll vent for an hour or two, but she always goes home. She's never stayed here.
Yeah.
And then he says that her and her friends do these pleasure party things, and he tries to make it sound like they're like weird sex fiends that have these like parties and they stay out all night when they do these parties. And her friends are like, that's literally never happened. Like, I don't know what he's talking about.
What is
like, she's never,
what is a pleasure party then? Like getting around and like selling sex toys to each other?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I guess you're a boy. You've probably never been to one. So listen to what he says about that though, because it's kind of weird.
And here's why. I'll be honest with you. I have been all along, will continue to be. If I woke up on a Saturday morning and my wife wasn't with me in the bed, as is normal, which might not be normal for you, I don't know, but for me, it would be normal, particularly if my wife's a late sleeper, which mine is as well on Saturdays, for her to be there in the bed when I get up. So if she were not, probably the first thing I would do would be to call her to find out where she was.
But what you're not aware of, what you're missing, is a lot of times that her and Brooke or sister or Sabrina, a lot of these girls, that they do all these, they go out and do stuff. Sometimes they do these, this is going to be embarrassing for me to talk to you about, but I'm wanting to get everything cleared up as quickly as I can. They do these fantasy parties. All these girls get together. They talk about and do whatever. And it's not uncommon for them, when they go out and party, they stay out the better part of the night, if not the whole night. So, and of course, I always have the children, you know, during that. They don't take the kids to that. Matter of fact, I take care of some of their other children while they're the ones going. It's not uncommon for, because they know I don't get into all that stuff, and they know that I'm a man, don't get me wrong. Understand that, a white-blooded American male. And there's no sense, I'm not telling you anything different, but they do all these parties and order all this stuff. Well, who gets the kids? I'm good enough to get the kids for all this, and I'm a good enough person to do that. And then when everybody sees a little bit of distress, they're going to throw me under the bus. You know, they need to re-examine all these other actions, how, you know, and I can understand the family wanting to vent and stress. And it makes perfect sense to me. But these people know me better than what's going on. And before this is all over and done with, you all are too. But it really, it bothers me because not only have I been a victim, I can't even, my mind's not even where it should be because I'm trying to protect Eli from this. And I'm trying to, he's the most important person that I'm trying to protect. I don't care about them dragging my name through the mud right now because I'm going to keep the main focus and emphasis on bringing her back safely and as quickly as possible. But it really bothers me what's being done in the method that everybody's pursuing and doing. Because what's going to happen is I don't want their apology. I don't want nothing from them. But then after this is all said and done, they're going to sweep it under the rug, and then they're just going to forget about what they've done to me in the process. What I've got to be faced with now is, as good a mother as Crystal's been, now, nobody's going to love you like a mother. Now, Eli is in an atmosphere where I've got all the hope in the world, but now I'm a single parent, it appears to me, where she's been there 100% of the time for him, to raise and rear him, where I know that he didn't have to go to a daycare or a babysitter, and I know that his mother is going to take care of him. And now, where am I at without that love and support from her? Now I've got a little boy who's two, who's going to grow up his life. If something's not done, where she's not brought back safely, now one of the very most important people in his life, he's got to grow up without. You see what I'm saying? And I'm in here answering a bunch of bullshit that I'm doing the best that I can possibly do with. but it's taken a lot of energy and effort away from the other efforts that could be out there trying to help and bring her back here safely. I can't even go out on the side of the road without looking like a murderer or something like that. It's wrong. I've been extremely honest with you all, and now I'm up here doing all they can have the house. I'll take anything that you want. You don't need any of that paperwork or search warrants. And now I'm up here trying to get my head where I can be on the side of being able to protect myself and defend myself for my son whenever I'm the one that's, I feel like, has the largest loss. So, well, do what you got to do. I'll do whatever I can, but this is starting to get silly. I don't need an attorney. I haven't asked for an attorney. I don't need none of that. I'm innocent. I'm willing to talk to whoever. But this to me is really starting to get silly.
Yeah, he's good enough to stay home, like, and watch the kids. Like, what a nice guy he is, you know? Like,
yeah, that's literally what he said. I'm such a good person. You've literally had CPS called on you because you're such a dick to her older kids.
Yeah.
I just thought that was a weird clip. I thought that clip was weird. One, because he's trying to, like, make her sound bad in the same clip that he's trying to make himself sound good. It was like,
well, in the same clip, though, the officer's like, dude, you wake up and the woman that you're in a relationship with isn't here. My first phone call would be to her. What are you doing? Right. And he's like, oh, well, sometimes she goes out for these parties. So you're saying she wakes up in the middle of the night, goes to these parties and is out all night? Like, you said you went to bed next to her. You know, like, that doesn't add up.
Yeah, it doesn't add up at all. And there's way more examples of this, but I'm not going to keep playing you terrible clips of this guy. If you want to listen to his interrogation videos, they're all on YouTube. So the investigator starts honing in on little details that aren't adding up. So one of the things that he asks him about is a phone call. Because see, now at this point, they have his phone record. They have his phone. They're in the other room downloading his phone while he's being interrogated. And so they asked, who called you after midnight on the night of July 3rd? And he's like, oh, I have no idea. And the cop's like, you don't remember getting a call in the middle of the night while you were driving home from the farm? Because remember, according to his story, they stayed at the farm until midnight, which the police have verified with surveillance video that they didn't leave the farm until 11:55 p.m. is when his truck is seen leaving the farm.
Yeah, that's suspicious. That's real weird.
Yeah, and the cop's like, you can't remember who called you in the middle of the night. And he's like, no, I don't know. So at this point, they bring his phone back in so that he could see who called him. And he's like, oh, okay, that call at midnight was Steve Lawson.
Who is Steve Lawson?
Yeah, well, that's what the cop was like, who the fuck's Steve Lawson?
Okay, I'm getting good at this, Erica. I know the questions to ask.
Yeah. And Brooke was like, oh, he's a guy who works for me. And the cop's like, great. Why is he calling you in the middle of the night? Just because he works for you, why is he calling you in the middle of the night?
Yeah, it's a good question.
And he's like, oh, those drywaller guys, those tile guys, they call at all hours of the night.
They don't call like that.
No, of course not. But that's what he's trying to tell the cop. It's like, oh, they call me whenever they get the job done. And he's like, so you're telling me he was on a job until after midnight? And he's like, oh, yeah, all the time.
Well, I can see that. Understandable that.
Yeah. Not on a Friday night going into 4th of July weekend. So he still says, though, that he can't remember what this specific call was about. So he calls Steve Lawson in the middle of this interrogation.
Okay.
So I'm going to play the clip of the phone call.
Hey, Steve. Hey, I can't hear you real good. I'm going to ask you to speak up a little bit, okay?
Okay, sir.
Hey, I was wanting to know, hey, I've got some things going on next week. I'm going to need your help with it. Are you already booked up, or can you help me?
I haven't moved up yet. I'm still looking for a place. That's why I needed your numbers from you.
All right. Well, I can write them all down and get them there for you. But I was actually talking about doing some more work with your little skid steer and so forth. Mine's still broke down.
Well, I said, get with me tomorrow. I'm coming. I know you're hard time hearing me. That's where I'm located at.
All right. It is a very difficult and trying time, but I appreciate you saying that. But hey, I need your help while I got you on the phone here. Do you remember the other night you called me really, really late, and I forgot what you asked me. Can you, I guess we wasn't on the phone. I might have been tired. I know was pretty late at night. Can you remember what you asked me or what you were after? I can't remember.
Yes, sir, I can. I told you to ask you for them numbers for a house.
Oh, for a rental house.
Yes, sir.
And what did I forgot. What did I tell you?
You told me that you would call, what's her name, Katie or whatever she handles all that.
Crystal.
Crystal, okay, I apologize.
Yeah.
And she said she handles all that, and that you would get back with me on it.
All right, thank you so much, Neil.
Hey, if there's anything I can do, you give me a call.
Thank you. You have a good night, Neil.
Yes, sir. God bless you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Whoops.
Yeah.
In this interrogation, which you didn't listen to the whole thing, but his whole story this whole time is they left the farm together at midnight, him and Crystal. And they went home, and then she played on her phone when he went to bed, and then she vanished in the middle of the night. So this detective, right after this, he's like, why would you have to call Crystal? She was in the car next to you.
So he pinned him. I mean, he must have put him in between like a rock and a hard place right there.
Yeah, Brooks is really letting this interview get the best of him. The more info he gives, he's backing himself into a corner, and this detective is just, like, on it.
Yeah. Well, he put himself into a corner, and the cop is closing in on that corner. He's making him answer these questions, and he doesn't know where he's going because he's probably lying.
Yeah, and he's not answering them. Like, even that specific question where the cop was like, why would you have to call her? She was next to you in the car. He's like, well, you know, it was super late. And the cop's like, so? She was right there next to you in the car.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just ask her? And he's like, well, because, you know, it was super late and we don't want to be, I don't know. He started to answer the right way. Like, well, I didn't want her to have to work that late. Like, we were on a date night. I just figured we'd do it tomorrow. He never really says that. He just says a lot of words that don't equal that. So anyway, he never really backs himself out of that. The detective is asking him like these hard hitting questions. And then his phone rings. And he asked the detective, like, you mind if I pick this up? And he's like, no, go ahead. Because the detective's like, fuck, the last time you got on the phone, you fucked yourself. Might as well do it this time. So this is what happens when his phone rings in the interview.
We're still getting video from different places, you know, along that route. Can I get this?
Sure.
You come out?
No. I'm up here. I know that you didn't know. I'm up here in this interview with the detective, Detective Snow. I've been up here a good little while. I'm filling out this this statement here and everything. Are you telling me that's what I need to do? I know that. But the way that I look at it is I'm innocent, I ain't done nothing wrong. Well, you know. I know you told me innocent people have got jammed up, but if you're telling me to leave, I'll get up and leave. If you want me to. I know I'm going through a lot, but I'm trying to get this guy to help me. I don't think she's ran off with some other guy. I don't believe that. You can't make me think that. No. Yeah, so do I. I'll do exactly what you're telling me to do right now. Do you want me to get up and leave? Man, I don't think these people have got a vindictive just to skin me for no reason. Man, this is not their family. This is not. He thinks y'all are gonna fuck is what he thinks.
I don't know who he is.
Nick, my brother.
I know it, but I'm not.
He just said just to keep sitting up here. He said, give a statement, do an interview, whatever I gotta do it. But he said, no, just to keep just letting them just beat you to death over this right here. Just ask what you gotta ask and look, you know.
All right.
You don't know this yet, but the detective does. His brother, Nick Houck, is a Bardstown police officer.
Okay. So that makes sense why he's taking his advice then of like, you know, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. I'll get out of here. That makes sense. I was wondering why he was listening to his brother, but okay.
So when Chief McCubbin, remember Chief McCubbin from Jason Ellis's case?
I do. Same guy. Still around?
Yes. When he, well, this is only like a year and a half later.
That's kind of what I was
thinking. Or 2 years later. Yeah. So when Chief McCubbin hears about this call during this interview, he is less than thrilled with Nick Houck.
Yeah, I can understand why. I mean, he's calling a suspect and telling him to leave the interrogation.
Yeah, yeah. And he says because of their oath and their ethics and everything, they don't have the same rights that we do. Or so, you know what I mean? McCubbin's like, you can't tell him not to fucking talk to us. Like, you're a cop above all else.
Yeah.
So Brooks eventually ends this interview pretty quickly after this phone call. But a week later, the Kentucky State Police, who are investigating, and the Sheriff's Department, the Nelson County Sheriff's Department, are trying to question Nick Houck because his brother's girlfriend is missing. And he inserted himself into this whole fucking thing. So they're trying to question him. And he's not being very cooperative or helpful. A police officer.
Yeah, you'd think the brother-at-arms would be there for him and be like, yeah, let's bust this no matter who it is. Just kind of like how we do this with this podcast. Like, we don't care who the problem is. It could be you. It could be me.
Yeah. So Chief McCubbin tells him he doesn't have a fucking choice. He's going to go down there and he's going to do this interrogation, you know, do this interview with the KSP. Like, it's a direct order. It's not a choice. He's like, you're not a civilian. You don't get to decide what you're going to do and don't do. So he goes in for this interview, but also before he goes into this interview, they take away his police cruiser to search it, I guess.
Yeah, what else are they going to do with it?
Yeah, and they put him on an administrative leave. So this interview went a lot like Brooks's interview. Can't remember shit, doesn't know anything, can't, well, how am I supposed to remember what happened yesterday? It's like, because it was yesterday and your brother's girlfriend is missing.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't like a normal Tuesday afternoon and you don't remember what all went down. Something major happened. You should be able to remember this. And he's like, oh, I don't remember anything. And they're like, well, that's weird. You know, and he also tries to say that him and Brooks aren't very close. He's like, yeah, we maybe see each other a couple times a year.
That doesn't seem likely either.
And they call him on this right away because they're like, that's weird. You live at 104 Glenview Road and he lives at 113, which means you live like six houses away from each other.
And you never see each other?
Yeah. And he's like, well, we might see each other on the street, but we don't spend any time together. I really don't even know Crystal that well. Like, he's trying to distance himself from his brother. Like, he's saying, like, I'm not very close with him.
Yeah.
It's like, then how come you called him during that interview? That just happened to be one of the three times a year you see him?
It is kind of weird. It is. But I could also understand family, like a brother, you know, hearing that his brother is in trouble and being like, okay, look, don't talk to him. Like, I can understand it. I can. I still think it's shady and there's something going on, but I can understand, even though they don't talk to each other, why they would talk to each other at this point.
But since then, they've gotten surveillance video from different gas stations and other people's houses and stuff. And after Brooks left that interrogation, sometime after 7 p.m., him and Nick were seen driving him in front of Nick's cruiser out to the family farm the night of Brooks's interrogation. And so the cop asked him, they're like, well, you saw him last week out at your mom's farm. And he's like, I don't remember that. And the cop's like, well, it's on fucking video, you idiot. And he goes, well, that must just be a coincidence that he happened to go out there right before I did. And the cop's like, you're literally following each other in the video. And he's like, nope, I don't even remember seeing him that night.
Wow.
Yeah, the cop's like, what is this fucking guy's deal, man? It doesn't even make any sense. You're a cop. You know what we're going like, this doesn't make any sense. So he also says that he just moved. So they live on the same street. But 2 days after Crystal goes missing, Nick moves to a different house. So that's kind of weird,
That's pretty weird. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Was it on the same street?
No, he moves to like a totally different house.
Pretty weird.
Yeah. So they also ask him about a blanket that they found in the trunk of his police cruiser. And he's like, oh, that's just like a moving blanket from when I moved. I just moved like 2 days ago or a week ago or whatever. Okay, but how come when we spray it with luminol, it lights up like a fucking Christmas tree? And he's like, oh, I don't know. It shouldn't.
And luminol is the substance that you use to see blood, right?
Any bodily fluid.
Any bodily
blood, fluid. Sweat, semen, any bodily fluid. Saliva. So they're like, how come it lit up like a Christmas tree? And he's like, oh, it shouldn't. And they're like, but it did. And he's like, but it shouldn't. And they're like, but it did, though. That's what we're telling you it did. And he's like, well, you're making it up. And they're like, we're not making it up. It did. And he's like, no, I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, but we're telling you that the lab ran tests and it lit up. It did do that. And he's like, no, it can't. It wouldn't. There's no way.
No chance.
And they're like, wow, okay. So he's literally like everything. He's just like, no, or I can't remember. Or, we're not that close, or we don't talk. Okay. And the can't remember thing is really driving this detective nuts, because you're a cop and your sister-in-law, for all intents and purposes, is missing.
And you're being zero help.
Well, and you think you would be like taking notes and paying attention to stuff. You're a cop. You would be in cop mode when somebody's missing, you know?
Yeah.
And he's just like, blah, blah, blah. Don't have any idea. The other weird thing is they ask him how he heard about Crystal being missing. And he's like, I can't remember. Dude, that's not even an incriminating statement. Even if your brother was the one who called you and said, Crystal's missing, what do I do? That would be normal. You're a cop and his girlfriend's missing. It would be normal if he called you. And he's like, no, he didn't call me. He's like, I must have heard about it on the news or on Facebook or something. He didn't call me. Even if you're not close with your brother, if your girlfriend's missing and your brother's a cop, wouldn't he be your first call?
Yeah, you'd certainly think so.
Yeah, no. He's like, oh, no, I think I heard about it on Facebook or something. What? They just have this like nonchalant, if I just say I can't remember, everything goes away attitude.
It'll just all go away. Just all disappear. We just keep denying it.
Yeah, but nothing really much happens after this. I mean, the police chief, McCubbin, he makes Nick come in for a polygraph test. You're a cop. You're not a civilian. You can't refuse it. So he's like, all right. So, and Brooks takes a polygraph test too. Brooks comes out inconclusive and Nick fails miserably his polygraph test.
Not surprising.
Yeah. So Chief McCubbin is pissed and fires him. He's like, you don't deserve to be a cop. Something's going on here. Even if you weren't involved in her disappearance, you have knowledge of what the hell's happening here.
Well, I'll be damned. I mean, that is exactly how it should be, right? You screw up this big, you're not a cop anymore. You're off. But how many times do we see cops getting defended and like their jobs preserved? It's like, no, man, if you can't be a good person, you can't be a cop.
Oh no, Chief McCubbin has zero tolerance for this.
I dig this guy. He's my new favorite cop.
Yeah, he literally called him in. He's like, by the way, I'm gonna fire you and I'm gonna take pleasure in doing it.
I love that.
Yeah.
I do love that.
Because he had to go to like the mayor to get permission to fire him. I guess that's how it works there. And so he's like, I'm gonna go to the mayor and I'm gonna fire you. I'm gonna do it and I'm gonna like it. And he said that Nick Houck was just like, okay. He'd been a cop for almost 10 years and didn't even give a shit.
Yeah. It's really weird, you know?
Yeah. So the same day that McCubbin is able to fire Nick Houck, the sheriff's department announces that Brooks Houck is the only suspect in Crystal's disappearance and presumed murder, which police forces don't usually just say who their prime suspect is.
No, they don't, because it'll ruin the investigation. But they're like, yeah, we know.
Right.
We know who we're going after.
Yeah, that's how obvious this was. They're like, yeah, it's this guy. There's billboards all over town with her picture on them. And it says Brooks Houck, prime suspect. Everybody knows this guy is the prime suspect, but nothing else really happens. I mean, it's a small police force. They don't really have a budget, so it's not like they can do big, you know, searches that cost a lot of money or anything.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it. They fail the polygraph tests and they have these two really shit interviews, and then like kind of nothing really else happens. So Crystal's parents lead the searches and form like a group of volunteers. Her family does their own investigation. Her dad, Tommy, and her brother and her mom and her sister, they literally do their whole own investigation for months. But nothing really happens with the real police until December 15th of 2015. So later that year, like 6 months later, they arrest a guy named Danny Singleton, but not for murder. They arrest him on perjury charges, 38 counts of perjury, for lying to a grand jury during proceedings about Crystal's disappearance.
Wow, that's big time. That's big news.
Yeah.
Who is he?
He works for Brooks Houck.
Oh, it's getting hot.
So he ends up later the next year pleading to a lesser charge of false swearing, which sounds a lot the same as perjury, but it does not have the same sentence. So he ended up only getting less than a year, even though he admitted he lied to the grand jury about where he was when Crystal disappeared. All he got was 300 days in jail, so they released him with time served.
Oh, man, that's it?
Yeah. And that led nowhere. They knew he was lying and they proved he was lying, but couldn't still prove anything else. So
yeah, just went nowhere. Damn.
Yeah. Then over a year later, after a really big investigation by Crystal's family, there was still no more arrest. They hadn't found Crystal's body. They were not really any closer, although Tommy was making big strides in the investigation, getting tips and leads, and he was feeling like he was on the track to something. But on the morning of November 19th, 2016, so right before Thanksgiving, Tommy Ballard, Crystal's dad, was taking her 10-year-old son, Trenton, hunting on his property. And they were going to meet Casey Ballard, which was Crystal's brother, and his son out there, because Casey lived either on this property, this family hunting property, or right near it. So Tommy and Trenton got up early and got out there first, and Tommy was wearing his Justice for Crystal sweatshirt when he got out of his truck, grabbed his rifle, looked through the scope of his rifle, like out towards the woods, and then a shot rang out.
From him?
Well, Casey thought it was him. Casey heard it from his house. And he was like, oh shit, my dad already got a deer. Like, he just got out there. But that's not what happened.
Was he getting shot at?
Yes.
Ooh.
Tommy was shot center mass right in the chest by someone waiting in the woods.
What?
On his own property.
Wow.
Waiting in the woods on his own property. That property also backs up to the Bluegrass Highway, by the way. Bluegrass Parkway, whatever they call it. So Trenton, who was standing right next to his papa when he got shot, had to search through his papa's clothes to find his cell phone and call his mama, his grandma, Sherry, and tell her that Tommy was just shot. So Casey got there, Sherry got there, and the authorities got there. By the time they got there, Tommy was dead. But they never found anybody. They never found anybody in the woods. They never found anybody who saw anything on the highway. They even asked for people with dash cam videos, truckers and stuff that were driving on the Bluegrass Parkway, to send in their dash cam videos to see if there was any cars parked, you know, in that area. Nothing. Yeah, and Trenton said that he was trying to talk after he got shot, but that he couldn't because he couldn't breathe. So his family and the community, everybody is devastated. You know, because he seemed like he was getting closer and was, you know, making strides in Crystal's case. He was even going to run for sheriff of the county. But other than that, there's no motive for anyone else to kill him. So this was clearly because of his work on Crystal's case.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Yeah, so everybody's devastated because they're like, another? And this is very reminiscent of Jason Ellis's murder. He was shot at from the woods. So the police did everything they could. They tried to find anybody with dash cam videos from the Bluegrass Parkway to see if they could see any cars or anything. But there's never been any leads in Tommy's murder.
That's crazy. Just now, it's hunting season. Is there a chance that it was just a wrong shot? I mean, guy got hit center, no. So probably not, right?
Well, there's a couple reasons why probably not, though. One is it was private property. They weren't like in the middle of the... It was his property.
That's right. Yeah.
So it... Not really. And then two, if it was a hunting accident, somehow, just say, they couldn't have hit him from that far away, center mass, without aiming. And the person would be like running over there like, oh my God, is he okay? I just, like, if you shoot somebody by accident in a hunting accident, you're not going to dip. Then it looks like a murder.
Yeah.
You're going to stay. And I mean, if it was really an accident, it was an accident.
Yeah. When you're right, you're right.
Yeah. So this is really devastating. I mean, for Sherry, especially, she's already lost her daughter. Now she lost her husband, you know, and then Tommy's dad. Oh, my God. I can't even imagine when I watch interviews with that poor man, which would have been Crystal's grandpa.
Yeah.
He lost his daughter in the 70s. Remember, her husband murdered her. Then he lost his granddaughter. And now he's lost his son. All to murder.
That's crazy. What are the odds?
What are the fucking chances? Terrible. Yeah, so this is horrible. And this town is just like, oh my God, what is happening? There's too many coincidences. There's too much connecting all of this, you know? The fact that Nick, the brother, was on the police force with Jason, they worked the same shift. Crystal's missing, now Tommy's murdered. There is kind of a general consensus that the Netherlands don't really have a lot of connections. Remember Kathy and her daughter Samantha?
Yeah.
They can't find any connections between them and the Ballards or the Houks or Jason Ellis. Like, they can't find... The only connection is that Jason Ellis had a special needs son and she was a special ed teacher. Mm. But there's I mean, that's a very loose connection.
Totally, because they weren't from the same school or anything, were they?
I'm sure they were. It's not a very big town, but...
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah, but I still don't see how that would make it a connection, you know?
Yeah, that's real weird.
Yeah, so everybody's pretty obviously convinced that the Hawks, allegedly, are somehow responsible for all of this.
It sounds like it. I mean, there's at least a compelling argument for it.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's it.
That's all we got.
Crystal's children have to grow up without a mother and without their papa now. Sherry lost her entire world, and that's it. Brooks stopped letting her see Eli right around this time.
That sounds like Brooks, yeah.
Yeah, in the beginning, her and Tommy had judged, say that they had, like, grandparents' visitation or whatever, and then around this time, after Tommy's murdered, that kind of all ends, and they don't get to see Eli anymore. He doesn't get to see his siblings.
Oh, gosh, this poor kid, man. Ugh, I hope he's doing okay.
Yeah, then Brooks gets another girlfriend, whose name is also Crystal, and she's a tall, pretty blonde. And then she gets arrested for taking down missing Crystal Rogers signs in town.
Well, I can understand why. I mean, I don't agree with it, but I can understand the guy that you're not involved with is being accused of at least something going on with this woman. I can understand her ripping those down. Like, he didn't do it. I believe my man, you know, kind of thing. But
yeah, but it's just all this. Ugh.
Oh, it's terrible.
Everybody knows. Yeah, it's just bad. So by 2020, still nothing. I mean, this is 4 years later. So the FBI finally kind of just takes over. They're like, all right, this is our case now. Obviously, you guys can't handle it. The Kentucky State Police can't handle it. It's ours. I mean, it should be. There's missing people, there's unsolved murders of cops and moms and kids, and, you know, this is bad. And no progress had been made on any of them, so it makes sense that the FBI took over. They have more resources. So in the summer of 2020, 150 agents rolled into town.
That's a lot. I mean, you imagine? Could you imagine?
That's a lot of people.
That's a ton of people, like, all feds. Yeah. Like, that's, I mean, what is that? That's overwhelming.
150, yeah. So they roll into town and serve like 9 search warrants all at once. Bunch over here, bunch over here, you know. And all at the normal, you know, at Brooks's house, at their family farm, at Nick's house, at their grandma's house. They also did over 100 interviews. And then nothing. They just went away.
They just disappeared?
Yeah, just gone. So then in September of 2021, so over a year later, they come back. They're like, hey, remember us feds? We're back. Not all 150 of them, but quite a bit of them. And they served a search warrant on a rental house that Brooks owned at the time of Crystal's disappearance, and he was working on it at the time. They dug up the driveway, and they found what they called items of interest.
Oh, well, I'm interested.
Yeah, so was everybody else, but they didn't tell us, and they also just left again. Which brings us to 2023, so 2 years later.
Yeah.
8 years after the disappearance, but 2 years after they came and did that search warrant and found items of interest. September 7th of 2023, a guy named Joseph Lawson was indicted for conspiracy to commit murder and tampering with evidence in Crystal's case.
That seems significant. Yeah, that seems significant because isn't Steve Lawson the guy that he called in the investigation?
Yeah, but this is Joseph Lawson. Did I say Steve?
I don't know. I heard Lawson.
Right. And I'm glad that sounded familiar to you because there is a connection. Joseph Lawson is Steve Lawson's son.
Okay.
So yes, the guy he called in the interview, but this is his son. Maybe. We're actually not 100% sure of that yet, but Steve Lawson, according to public records, has a son named Joseph Lawson, who's the same age as this one arrested, but it hasn't been, like, totally clarified, but we're pretty sure.
Seems pretty likely.
Yeah. So, Joseph Lawson, son of Stephen Lawson, he had a court date where he pled not guilty to these charges from a hospital bed.
Oh.
And was given a court date of October 26th. Now, Joseph, this guy that was arrested from in the hospital bed, he's a paraplegic. See, his legs don't work.
Yeah, right. I understand the para of the plegic.
Yeah, but he wasn't a paraplegic when Crystal went missing, but he is now.
What happened?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
He got a motorcycle accident, I think. I don't know. This guy's a Mexican American, big time. So the other reason that he might have been in the hospital could have been a detox situation after they arrested him, but I don't really know for sure. It's either that they didn't have a facility in the jail because of his disability, or maybe he was detoxing. We don't really know.
Yeah, I can see that.
Not the point. He pleads not guilty, and they hold him on a $500,000 bond, which he's never going to be able to pay.
Good.
Then on September 27th, 2023, after 8 long years, Brooks Hauk was arrested.
No way. Hell yeah. Why?
Yes. He was charged with murder and evidence tampering.
They linked him to it?
Yep. Well, not yet. He hasn't gone to court, but he's been arrested for it.
I do feel bad for Eli. I mean, guy's lost his mom, his papa. Now he's lost his dad. I do feel bad for him, but I do not feel bad for Brooks.
No. So they arrested him on the 27th, and he also pled not guilty, obviously, but he was held on a $10 million bail.
Mm. Now, he's a wealthy guy. Can he afford that?
Yeah, but not really, because it's all tied up in real estate.
Okay. That makes sense.
But there was a hearing on October 5th, and his attorneys tried to get his bond lowered because they're like, Judge, that's ridiculous. In the history of the state of Kentucky, the highest bond there's ever been is $3 million. Why is this guy's over three times whatever the highest was? But the prosecution put on a pretty good case about why, and they're like, because he owns 100 rental properties, and he knows he's facing life in prison. He could just sell all that stuff, liquidate, pay the bond, and be out of here and gone.
Yeah, it's kind of what I was thinking. Like, he needs to, needs to be that high because of how much he's worth. Like, isn't bond generally set on, isn't it based on what you're worth, not what you've done?
It's multiple things. It's based on the severity of the crime, how much money you have, your risk of flight. So like your risk of not showing back up.
Right.
And if you're a danger to the community when they let you out on bond.
Got it.
The prosecution did a good job of arguing like, hey, other people have been murdered since Crystal was, you know, that we're pretty sure.
And before.
Yeah. We're pretty sure he's a danger. Her dad was literally murdered during her investigation because he was investigating her disappearance. And the bombshell that the prosecution dropped during that court hearing was that they have the gun that they believe killed Tommy Ballard.
Really? And maybe we don't know this yet, but can they tie it to Brooks?
Well, according to the prosecutor, they purchased it from Nick Hauk.
What?
Brooks's brother. And he obviously was an undercover job. They didn't really go into it because it was just a hearing about the bond. But he told the judge that they have the gun that they believe killed Tommy Ballard and that they bought it from Nick Hauk. And Nick Hauk was using a fake name when he sold it to the police.
Wow. And they know who he is, right? Like, he's a former cop in their district. They know exactly who this guy is. Yeah.
I'm sure it was a sting trying to get that guy. Like, I'm sure it was a sting, but they haven't said it yet.
Certainly seems like it, yeah.
So they said there's 5 points that they match for, you know, ballistics or whatever. And so far, they've gone through 4 of the 5 tests, and it's matched all 4.
Oh, man. Beyond a reasonable doubt, this dude is going down.
But that's the brother that sold the gun, that killed it, you know? So it's like, is this a big... I mean, obviously, it's a conspiracy. There's already been 2 people arrested. It's already been Brooks and Joseph.
Well, I mean...
It's like, how many people are involved in this?
Well, I can definitely see the brother going down, too. I mean, he's the police officer. He's got the one who's got probably a good shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
Well, Joseph Lawson's court date of October 26th that they set, you know, when he was arrested in September, was postponed to January, which is also Brooks's next court date. But the judge denied lowering the bond for Brooks. He's like, nope, $10 million sounds great. We're going to leave it at that. You guys are just going to sit in jail while we figure this out. So it really seems like somebody's talking, and I don't think it's Brooks.
Who do you think it is?
That Joseph Lawson guy, the only other guy arrested.
Oh, right.
Because his court date was postponed in October. He was supposed to have a court date, and it was postponed. And since that, they've done more searches that seem real specific, like somebody told us to come here. So it kind of seems like somebody's gabbing. So just last week, on December 8th, so Friday.
Uh-huh.
They arrested a third person.
It's got to be Nick Howe, right? He's the only one left.
It's Steve Lawson.
It is Steve Lawson. What?
Yep. Same charges. Conspiracy to commit murder and evidence tampering.
Really?
Yep. And his first court date is next week, December 21st.
No way.
Yep. So we'll keep you updated on this one, guys, especially if there's a fourth arrest, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's still one more, maybe.
Dude.
Allegedly. Possibly.
This.
Hopefully.
This could totally come all the way around. What if all 4 of these guys went down? That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Or what if it's even more?
Or that. Yeah.
I mean, remember that Danny Singleton guy from the beginning that was arrested on perjury charges? Like, is he involved?
I don't even remember him. It's been so long.
I know. All right, well, this feels like as good a spot as any to jump in to give our updates on what's happened in the last 4 months since we recorded this episode.
I'm glad that there's been some updates on it since we last did it, because otherwise, like, we were left pretty much on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, I mean, there was 3 arrests, but we didn't really know how they were connected, so...
Yeah, or what was going to happen from there.
Right, so the first thing that we've learned is that when we were speculating that somebody might have been talking to the police, we were not wrong.
Oh, perfect. Who was it? Do we know?
Well, we speculated that it was Joseph, but it turns out that, well, it might have been Joseph, but for sure it's Stephen, the dad.
Okay.
The one that Brooks got the call from during the interrogation.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So his lawyer, in an interview with Shay McAllister, who's the investigative reporter that's been all over this case since it happened, she's from Louisville.
Louisville?
According to an interview with her and Stephen Lawson's attorney, he says that Stephen Lawson has been talking to the police for a while. He's had more than a dozen interviews. He's given them a lot of information. And he's pretty pissed that they arrested him because he was under the impression that if he gave all this information, he was going to get immunity.
Man, dude, that sucks.
And his lawyer was under that impression, too.
Oh, he had a lawyer through all of this?
Yeah, this is the lawyer giving the interview to Shay McAllister. And he's like, yeah, we've been in immunity talks with them for a while.
Oh.
He's like, so it kind of caught everybody off guard that they arrested him.
I thought he was doing this just on his own. And I was like, that sounds like a bad idea. But hey, man, I don't know. I've never been in this position. But so he was even trying to do things the right way through a lawyer. And he still kind of went up. Shit's crazy.
Well, when the prosecutor tells you that you're going to get immunity if you tell the truth, if they don't think you told the whole truth, they're going to charge you. It seems like that might be what happened.
Oh,
it seems like they got his story, served their search warrants, they got their arrest warrants for Joseph and Brooks, and then maybe one of them started talking, and it turns out maybe Stephen didn't tell the whole truth, and that's why he got arrested later. Not sure. That's all speculation, in my opinion, but that seems like what went on there.
It's pretty crazy.
His lawyer said, though, that he admitted to him that that phone call was staged during that interrogation. It's like, yeah, we know. We heard it.
We heard him answer.
But he also said that Joseph, when they asked him like what his involvement was, he said he was heavily involved, but that Stephen wasn't. So Stephen's kind of like ratting on his own son is what's happening. And Stephen says that Joseph is the one that dropped Crystal's car off on the side of the road and Stephen picked him up.
That's so tough, you know? I mean, but obviously we prefer this than Paul Flores and Ruben Flores and the saga that they had for 24 years. But I mean, this really puts this dad in a really hard spot.
But I mean, you can't help your kid cover up a murder and get away with it. So
you really can't. I mean, and especially expect to have no repercussion onto you, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're even seeing like with school shootings, like we're seeing the parents who are getting charged with manslaughter now too. So you really can't be any type of an accessory and get away with it.
So another surprising thing that we haven't heard in the last 4 months is anything else about Tommy Ballard and Nick Houck. Remember the prosecutor dropped that bombshell about having the gun that killed Tommy Ballard?
Yeah.
And that they bought it from Nick Houck?
Right, right.
There's been nothing so far in that. No arrests, nothing in that case.
Is that surprising? Because, I mean, that was just hearsay, right?
It surprises me.
Wasn't that just hearsay?
No, they had the gun.
Well, I know they had the gun, but wasn't it just hearsay where he got it from?
No, they bought it from Nick Houck in an undercover sting.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right.
So that seems kind of interesting that there hasn't been any charges there yet, but maybe they're still building their case. Maybe they don't have a case. I don't know.
Yeah.
Another thing that we've learned is after Brooks got arrested, Sherry, Crystal's mom, filed for custody of Eli, their 10-year-old son.
Yeah.
But the Houcks are fighting her on that. They also want custody. So all those court records are sealed, though, because he's a minor, and that makes sense.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, that's exactly right.
That's
how it should be done. So
yeah, because they're going to have a lot to work out with that. Because I mean, where does he go?
I mean, I hope he goes to the safest place he can.
So that's up to somebody else to decide.
How old is he again?
Those court records are sealed. He's 10 now.
That's crazy. I mean, this poor guy, man. He's been through so much already.
So I hope whatever works out with that, it's whatever's best for him. So, all right. Next on the things that we've learned is that Brooks' bail. You remember that crazy high $10 million bail?
Yeah.
He keeps going through all these appeals and trying to send it to higher courts and everything, and they keep upholding it. So they're like, nah, fuck you. $10 million seems right.
Yeah. Good luck getting it.
Yeah. So he went through his final appeal And they said, absolutely not. So he can't even appeal it anymore. That's his bail.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah. I don't know why they don't just say no bail. Like, I don't know why they have to give him bail, but whatever.
I mean, it's in the Constitution, isn't it, that there has to be, like, bail? Is that not, is that right?
No, they hold people on no bail all the time.
Oh, all right, well.
But I wonder if they have to, like, meet a certain criteria of evidence or something. I don't know.
I don't know. That's crazy.
Anyway, in early February, all three of them were in court for the first time together. So Brooks Houck, Stephen Lawson, and Joseph Lawson.
In the same courtroom?
Yep. And the judge set a date for their trial for February of 2025.
Why so far out? So that the each side can put a case together?
Oh, yeah. Because there's like a terabyte of evidence that they've had to give over to the defense and discovery.
Oh, wow.
And besides that, there's going to be a whole lot of other hearings between now and then. That February 25 date's probably not going to hold up. That's just like a tentative date because the prosecutors were going to put in a motion saying that they want to try all three of them together. And the defense of each of them has already said that they're going to fight that, that they want to split it up.
All right. Yeah.
The defense attorneys are like, no, thanks. We don't want to do that.
They have enough going on.
Yeah. And since that court date, all three of their attorneys have filed motions for changes of venue. They don't want to be tried in Nelson County.
Yeah.
Where this all happened.
I can understand thinking that they're not going to have much of a, you know, solid chance of getting a fair trial there. Everyone knows what happened.
Yeah, everybody does know what happened. And there's a lot of people showing up to court. Even Nick Houck, his brother, was in court at least one of them. I saw a video of him. He looked real uncomfortable.
Wouldn't you? I mean, this is a really uncomfortable thing.
Yeah. Well, and maybe he's next. So you never know. I don't think they've gotten everybody is my point. I think there's more to this story still.
It certainly seems like something's building for, you know, probably some twists and turns that we don't know, but...
Yeah. So in late March, they had a hearing about the change of venue, and the prosecution didn't argue it at all. They were just like, yeah, that makes sense. Everybody hates them, and, or at least Brooks. They're like, yeah, everybody thinks he did it, so I get it, you know? Because they want him to have a fair trial, because they don't want him to win on appeal.
Yeah, you know? You don't want a retrial for sure.
Yeah, so the prosecution didn't even argue it. They were just like, yep, makes sense. So there's another hearing on May 1st, and the defense and the prosecution are supposed to like work together to try to figure out if they can agree on a venue. If the defense wants it in a certain county, if the prosecution's like, yeah, that makes sense, then they'll propose it to the judge. And if they can't come up with an agreement, then the judge will say, here's my suggestion, which is what we'll go with.
This is what we're doing now, so.
But I really don't think, I mean, it doesn't seem like the prosecution's going to argue wherever they want to have it is probably fine. I mean, this case is national anyway. It's not like they're going to go somewhere where nobody's heard of this case.
Yeah, and I mean, they might have a more fair trial somewhere else because I don't think it is something that everybody knows about. But I do think once you kind of lay it all out there, I mean, from what we know at least, the writing's kind of on the wall, right?
Yeah. So the only other things that are coming up is that May 1st hearing about the moving it, and then there's another hearing on June 13th about trying them together because the prosecution put that motion to try them together and the defense attorneys are fighting it, so they get to come up with a rebuttal case for why they don't think they should be tried together and then present it to the judge, and then he makes the final decision on whether they're tried together or separate.
What would you prefer?
I mean, I think I would rather them all be tried together so that we just have to watch one trial.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Well, plus it seems like you could tell a more cohesive narrative and make it all make sense if everything was all... Because if they try them separately, there's going to be stuff that they're not allowed to bring up at Brooks's trial. And there's going to be stuff that they're not allowed to bring up at Stevens and at Joseph. You know what I mean? Because of legal reasons.
Of course.
So if they try them all together, I think it'd be a lot easier. But I can also see... as the defendants, why you wouldn't want to be lumped in together. Like, you want to try to separate yourself so you could seem like the least culpable.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Kind of reminds me of, like, the trial of the West Memphis Three. You know, everyone was going after Damien, but they were all, quote-unquote, involved. I don't think they were at all, but...
Right. But especially if you're Stephen or Joseph, especially Stephen, though, because then he could be like, well, those two did everything. I just picked him up from the crime scene, you know?
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. We'll see what the evidence is at the trial. But I prefer the trial to be together for convenience for me. But for them
covering
and
it.
Getting a fair trial, I get it. They want it separated.
Yeah.
I get why. Same thing with Brooks. He doesn't want to be tried with those guys because those guys are both going to team up against him.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be like, yeah, he killed his girlfriend and then paid us to move the car, you know, or whatever their story's going to be. They're going to team up against him. So he doesn't want to be tried with him. So that I get that. But we'll see how it all shakes out.
This could get really interesting if all these guys turn on each other.
Yep. All right. Well, that's all we have. We'll keep you updated.
Well, before we go, I wanted to ask you one more question. Do you know what a prisoner's favorite punctuation mark is?
No.
It's a period because it marks the end of his sentence.
Good one. Good one.
I told you, like these it. Are just getting better and better, huh?
Yep. All right. I love you.
I love you too. Bye.
Bye.
This podcast has been a production of Orange Halo Media LLC, hosted by Grant and Erica. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. To chat with us, go to From Crime to Crime on Instagram, From Crime to Crime on TikTok, From Crime the Number 2 Crime on Twitter, or you can visit our website at FromCrimeToCrime.com. See you next Wednesday.